Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start off on page one then. We'll just skip back and go to the invocatory prayers. And start off with the Prabhupada pronounce. And then response.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paskritya Deshatarne Om Ajnana Timrandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Vilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapti Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Talulyascha Kripa Sindhu Vegacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Bol
Hare Bol.
So yeah, I'll just share one thing with you while it's so fresh in my mind and I can clear it out of the way. And that is that we can actually preach to anyone. We can talk to anyone about Krishna. It's okay. I had a nice experience today in Manchester. We had a public health, no, the environmental health inspector, the dreaded people, came to the door and came to, actually, because I called them in, which I thought was better that we asked them to come rather than they come and pay us a visit. So anyway, and they were very helpful. But, you know, she and the student who was accompanying her, they were actually listening for a long time to understand about how you're not the body and how actually Lord Chaitanya is there. They came and saw the altar and just discussing with them about who Krishna is, what the name Krishna means, and why we should chant, and why we distribute prasadam, and why we should be vegetarian, and we don't want to lose the chance of the human form of life. So, you know, even environmental health officers can also hear about Krishna. So, you know, this is a fact. So we should become very capable as much as possible of explaining to others about Krishna. Whatever level we can discuss on, but just try. Whatever level we can actually feel comfortable to explain on, just to explain to others about Krishna. And that would be really, really good. And we get some mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Even she was listening about how Lord Chaitanya, he came to inaugurate this chanting of the holy name. And that you can see him here on the altar and he's dancing with his associates, teaching people how to just chant the holy names of God, dance, and take nice feast of Krishna prasadam. So she was into it. But, you know, definitely we have to try at whatever level just to see what we can do to encourage others to understand about Krishna, and that would be good. It may seem a little scary at first, but actually, sometimes it is a little scary. But hey, you just try to do something for Krishna. Yeah. Just try to help this person understand something about Krishna, and the result is good. Yeah. You get the blessings. They get the blessings. Krishna is very happy. So it's good stuff. Okay, so let's read text chapter 2, text 4.
Page 65.
Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Okay, we're looking at text 4 on page 65. Do you have... You brought your own, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. It'll probably be on a different page on your edition, but it's still text, yes. Chapter 2, text 4.
Okay.
Okay. Arjuna Uvacha.
Arjuna Uvacha.
Katam.
Katam
Bhishmam
Bhishmam
Aham
Aham
Sankhye
Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam
Dronam
Cha
Cha
Madhusudana
Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi
Ishubhi
Pratiyotsyami
Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Pujarha
Pujarha
Parisudana
Parisudana
Pujarha Parisudana
Pujarha Parisudana
Arjuna Uvacha
Arjuna Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Purjar Harvarisudana Arjuna Uvacha
Arjuna Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Purjar Harvarisudana
Purjar Harvarisudana
Arjun Uvacha
Arjun Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Pujarhav Arisudana
Pujarhav Arisudana
Arjuna Uvacha
Arjuna Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami
Purjahav Arisudana
Purjahav Arisudana
Arjuna Uvacha
Arjuna Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam Cha Madhusudana
Ishubhi
Pratiyotsyami
Pujarha
Varisudana Arjuna Uvacha Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami Pujaha Varisudana Arjuna Uvacha Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami Pujaha Varisudana
Arjuna
Uvacha
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhye
Dronam cha Madhusudana.
Dronam cha Madhusudana.
Ishubhi
pratiyotsyami.
Pujarav Arisatsudana.
Pujarav Arisudana.
Arjuna
Vacha.
Katam Bhishmam Hari Sankhyam.
Katam Bhishmam Maham Sankhye.
Dronam Sa Cha Madhusudana.
Dronam Cha Madhusudana.
Ishuhi Prati Yotsami.
Ishubhi Prati Yotsyami.
Pujarhovi Arisudana.
Pujarhav Arisudana.
Arjuna Ovaka.
Arjuna Vacha.
Katam Bhishma Aham Sankhe.
Katam Bhishmam Aham Sankhe.
Dronam Ka Madhusudana.
Dronam Cha Madhusudana.
Ishubhi Prati Yotsyami.
Ishubhi Prati Yotsyami.
Pujara Arisudana.
Pujara Arisudana.
Okay, very good. Everyone's getting a lot more confident on this. This is really getting good stuff. Just the C is pronounced a cha, as in Chaitanya.
Right.
Not Ketanya, but Chaitanya. Okay. Yeah? Okay, let's do the word meaning.
Okay.
Arjuna Uvacha.
Arjuna Uvacha.
Arjuna said.
Arjuna said.
Katam.
Katam.
How?
Aham.
Bhishmam.
Bhishmam.
Bhishma.
Bhishma.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
I.
Sankhye.
Sankhye.
In the fight.
In the fight.
Dronam.
Dronam.
Drona.
Drona.
Cha.
Cha. Cha.
Also.
Also.
Madhusudana.
Madhusudana.
O killer of Madhu.
O killer of Madhu.
Ishubhi.
Ishubhi.
With arrows.
With arrows.
Pratiyotsyami.
Pratiyotsyami.
She'll counterattack.
Puja
arho.
Puja arho.
Those who are worshipable.
Those who are worshipable.
Arisudana.
Arisudana.
O killer of the enemies.
O killer of the enemies.
Arjuna said, O killer of enemies. O killer of Madhu. How can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? So please repeat. Arjuna said.
Arjuna said.
O killer of enemies.
O killer of enemies.
O killer of Madhu.
O killer of Madhu.
How can I counterattack with arrows?
How can I counterattack with arrows?
In battle.
In battle.
Men like Bhishma and Drona.
Men like Bhishma and Drona.
Who are worthy of my worship.
Who are worthy of my worship.
So Ashokra, would you like to read us the purport, please?
Yeah. Purport. Respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and the Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they are attacked, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasena, or his teacher, Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna.
Mm. Okay, yes, very nice. Prabhupada gave some very beautiful classes on these verses, in fact, and some of the points that he raised are that Arjuna saying to Krishna that he's addressing him as Madhusudana and Arisudana, that my dear Krishna, you are known as the killer of demons, you know, but Drona and Bhishma are not demons, they're my worshipable superiors, so therefore, you know, why, you know, it's very good for you to kill demons, but you wouldn't ever kill your family members, you wouldn't kill your father Ugrasena or Vasudev, you know. This is not possible for you. So Arjuna's putting in, you know, thoughtful language just to defeat Krishna, that, you know, how can you say that I should kill them? This is not right. So the conversation is going on between Krishna and Arjuna. It's just beginning, actually. And Arjuna, he's putting through his strong points Because in the end, Arjuna, he's actually bewildered. And he admits that he's bewildered. He's saying to Krishna that he's very depressed and he doesn't know effectively what his duty is anymore. So if we know what our duty is, then we should do it. But on the other hand, Arjuna does know what his duty is, but he's feeling weakness in his heart because of family affection, that he doesn't want to do his duty. And so this is also described as kripan, someone who's a miser. Suppose you have a lot of money and you just like looking at it, but you don't want to use it. This is a kripana. This is a miser. So Arjuna, he's not that he's short of strength. He has ample strength, he has ample skills, but he's reluctant to actually use them in this battle. So this is what Arjuna also himself is going to freely actually admit to Krishna, that this is miserly weakness that has come upon me. Arjuna himself has analyzed it very nicely. He's describing it as miserly weakness. He just doesn't want to do it. So, but at the same time he is bewildered because he knows this is his duty, but he can't decide what to do. He's at a crisis point. Should I fight or should I not fight? And this is at a very dramatic moment. Yeah. The whole battlefield is, you know, raging on both sides. And Arjuna is clearly there, right in the middle of both armies, the spotlight's on him. What's going to happen? And everyone's seeing that he's dropped his bow and he got up to fight. You know, everybody's sort of waiting for the thing to really launch, you know, with all the millions and millions of people to attack each other, and they're looking at Arjuna. And Arjuna has dropped his bow and he's sat down on his chariot. And, you know, it's a very serious moment. What's going to happen? You know, you don't get cliffhangers like this in the in the Hollywood movies or in the soaps. But this is very powerful stuff. And so Krishna's told him in text 3, actually, and if you look at text 2 and text 3, where Krishna speaks, the Supreme Personality of Godhead speaks, he tells Arjuna that, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? You know, these are serious impurities in your life, because you're a noble Kshatriya, you're a great warrior, you're respected by the great demigods who've given you weapons, you're actually a very great hero, and not only that, you're my friend. So now, what are these impurities on you that have come upon you that are causing you to decide not to do your duty? Because Aryans, people who know the progressive values of life, they do their duty. They don't hang about. They get on with it. And they don't, because they're not affected by such weakness of heart. They understand what has to be done, what is done to be done as a matter of duty, and they do it. End of story. And you're a Kshatriya, your duty is to fight, so you fight. So what is the problem, Arjuna? So these points are coming up. And he's telling Arjuna that what you're suggesting, Arjuna, is actually something very degrading. This isn't going to make you famous or take you to the higher planets. This is going to make you infamous, and it'll be actually degrade your whole character. People will speak very lowly of your reputation, because there can only be one reason for a Kshatriya not to fight, actually, and that's cowardice. Weakness of heart, that I shouldn't do my duty, is not reason to fight. So Arjuna, he's been very highly praised, so Krishna is telling him, this isn't going to make you famous as a great warrior. This is going to make you infamous. This is going to make people speak very unkind words about you. And actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says they'll joke about him. They say, yeah, Arjuna is a eunuch. He's been emasculated. He's what's happened to him? You know, that he's not fighting. So, and Krishna is telling him in text 3, that this is degrading impotence. He's using the word specifically, impotence. What's happened to your manhood, Arjuna? You know, that, where is your potency as a Kshatriya warrior? And this is a very degrading situation for you. So he's saying that it doesn't become you. You know, this isn't your character. You're a great noble Kshatriya. You're in the Yadu dynasty. You know, how can you think like this? The Kuru dynasty is in. So, you know, great noble warriors. So it's very unbecoming for a great Kshatriya to exhibit the symptoms of a coward. Yeah. It's just not on. So Krishna's telling him, Arjuna, you know, come off it. You can't do this. And he's telling him that you're yielding to this impotence. Don't do this. And they're saying this is due to your petty weakness of heart. So give it up. And this is actually what we sometimes experience in Krishna consciousness also, that sometimes we know we have some duties to do. Like for example, in the early days, just to give an example, in Berry Place, when we would be based down there, and it was the call, come on Prabhus, let's all go out on Sankirtan, let's go out and shout and dance on the street. Oh, I'm feeling a bit mental today, don't want to go out. You know. So, but this is weakness of heart, you know, because we have a duty to do, to go out and chant and dance, and that weakness of heart actually can make us not do our duty. And so Krishna is telling Arjuna, give it up. It's not befitting you. So we have to deal with this sometimes, that these weaknesses, these weak moments will come upon us where we'll succumb to less noble thoughts. Maybe I should go and hide in the cupboard. I'm only talking from practical experience. I never did go and hide in the cupboard. I know some devotees who did. But the Krishna is actually speaking in very strong language to Arjuna. He's telling him, you are the chastiser of the enemy. You are called, what's the word, Parantapa. So Parantapa means someone who gives his enemies trouble, actually. Who's that?
Mataji.
Oh, Rasky's coming. Yes. Okay, alright, good. So, you know, you're famous as someone who gives your enemies trouble, not someone who backs out from a fight. So this is very important. So, as a direct response to Krishna saying that you are the chastiser of enemies, Arjuna's responding, he's to being called Parantapa, the chastiser of enemies, Arjuna's response is, you are Madhusudana, and you are Arisudana. You're the killer of the Madhu demon, and you're the killer of so many other enemies. The Krishna, he is killer of enemies. So indirectly he's saying to Krishna, well, wait a minute. Killing enemies, killing demons is one thing, but killing, you know, your respectable predecessors, you know, your teacher and your grandfather, that's quite another thing, Krishna. You know, what are you asking me to do here? So it's a very significant moment for him. And Prabhupada makes the point that actually in a civilized society, in the Vedic culture, he says respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. So indirectly, Arjuna is saying to Krishna that if they come to me, even if they're attacking me because they're my superiors, rather than attack them, I should offer them flowers and actually worship them, do puja for them. So this is Arjuna's thinking. So this is, we can see this is quite different from today's modern culture, where the so-called culture, where parents or grandparents, Hare Krishna, welcome, where parents or grandparents are not really respected very much. And in fact, in Vedic culture, you've got five groups
who are to be considered worshipable. Who can say what are the five groups?
Is it elderly people?
Sorry?
Elderly people.
Yeah, the elderly, yeah.
Oh. Women.
Women, yeah.
Children.
Children.
Brahmins.
Was it kings or?
The cows.
Cows, okay.
Yeah. So these five groups are meant not just for being worshipped, but also being protected, specifically protected, not for being attacked. Very significant points here. So this is actually Vedic culture. Vedic culture means, or Brahminical culture, starting with the Brahmins. Basically, it's Brahminical culture means culture which is based on protection of the Brahmins and taking guidance from the Brahmins. But in this culture that we have today, we don't find that the Brahmins are actually protected. In fact, even if you look at it at the schools, very interestingly, I know some school teachers, and we find that when the teachers are at school, rather than being protected, they're not allowed to do anything to the students, even if the students come to attack them with knives or whatever. So actually it's a very topsy-turvy culture. And the teachers actually have, because there is no system of authority, the breakdown of authority is there in the school, that the teachers often have a real, you know, it's like a battlefield of Kurukshetra sometimes in their own classrooms, just trying to deal with the modern day situation. And the teachers often have to take the brunt of it. But actually, not only that, but the qualities of the Brahmins are very, very high, very exalted. The Brahmins, actual Brahmins, Krishna describes them. Maybe we can turn to that verse. Which verse is that where Krishna describes about the qualities of the different groups? Anyone? Any pundits around? I must admit, I find the eyesight going. Brahmins. Nearly there. Brahmanas, right. Duty for 1847. Let's have a look. Chapter 18, text 47. Krishna talks about what are the qualities. In fact, if you look at 1841, Krishna explains how you distinguish between what's a Brahmin and what's a Kshatriya and what's a Vaishya and what's a Sudra. Kieran, could you read us the English on page 678 of text 41, please?
Yeah, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own nature in accordance with the material modes or chastiser of the enemy.
Mm. So here we see that everyone has got different qualities. Like, for example, the qualities of a street sweeper will be very different from the qualities of, for example, a university professor. Yeah? Their quality of work is very different. So their nature is very different. And so according to people's situation in the material nature, which is actually nothing but a combination of these three modes of nature, people will display different qualities. So here we can see the varieties of the three modes of nature displayed in different ways. So, Kirtan, can you read us text 42, please?
peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas work.
Mm. These are natural qualities. So someone, you can see if they're peaceful, self-controlled, austere, pure, tolerant, honest, with good knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness, those are, they're Brahminical by nature. Yeah? So we don't find too many of those around in the modern society. We don't see these qualities being encouraged in modern society. Rather, we see in modern society you're encouraged to bend the rules, go out and get a job and somehow or other get yourself in a high position in society so you can enjoy your senses to the best possible way. So the austerity is gone, the wisdom is gone, just work for today, and the truthfulness is gone, the honesty is gone, even amongst the leaders of society the honesty is gone, self-control is gone, no, take intoxication, gamble, you know, all these things are encouraged in the modern day society, they're freely available. Gambling, mercifulness has disappeared. So, and religiousness, where is that in the modern society? Where is it, where do we find in the modern society that people are encouraged to be religious? Is there anywhere? Rather just the opposite. Yeah. Make fun of the royal, of what is left of the religious orders, actually. Poke fun at them. That is standard practice, yeah, everywhere. And yeah, peacefulness. Peacefulness is really a bit of a joke. Hare Krishna. Yeah, we were just discussing about your education. Actually, in a different way, we weren't discussing your exams. Hare Krishna. Okay, good. Yeah, we were just discussing about the qualities that you might be encouraged to develop at school. So let's just get some ideas, some feedback from you younger generation who actually happen to be at school these days. And so what would you say you're encouraged to be, or what sort of life are you encouraged to lead at school? What do they want you to do?
So, like, what do I want to be when I grow up? Or
yeah, what do they encourage you to want to be and how to live? What do you feel they're encouraging you to?
I want to be clever.
You want to be clever? Okay, that's good. And they encourage you to be clever?
Yeah.
Clever in what sense?
I like maths, English and science.
Uh-huh, okay. Good old... Anything to be clever about spiritual matters or religious matters?
I want to be clever in Krishna consciousness.
Okay, but what I'm saying is at school in general, do they encourage you to develop? Do they encourage the children to think about that?
They encourage people to Catholic because it's a Catholic school.
Ah. Okay, that's good. So there's still some remnants of that. They encourage people to be Catholics.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. And do they... Okay, good. So do they talk about the soul and...
Well, no.
They don't talk about the soul.
Because they get the Bible and you have to just write, copy down the stuff, put in bits. What?
Okay. So they don't actually teach you anything about the soul?
No.
Okay. I rest my case. Right. So anyway, the idea is that what actually is meant then is peacefulness, self-control, austerity. So just tell me if you think any of these things are taught to you at school. Be interesting to know. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. Are these things that generally are strongly encouraged at school?
Yeah, self-control, self-control,
okay,
tolerance, honesty, and
knowledge
and
religiousness.
Yeah.
Okay. See, you're a very pious young boy. So you pick up on anything that these are actually taught. But it's good that there is some semblance there. And it's encouraging that that's there. Okay, let's see about the qualities of Kshatriyas then. So, Rasika, would you like to read us text 43, please, if you can manage that one? Yeah.
Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas.
Okay. So these are interesting qualities. Are these things being taught at school? How to be a leader in society? Are you taught how to be a leader? No, okay. Are you taught to be a hero?
No.
Okay. What about, are you taught to be powerful?
Yes.
You are taught to be powerful. Okay.
Yeah.
In what sort of way?
By doing more exercise. And
exercise. Okay, physically strong.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do some PE. Do you all feel encouraged to be physically strong at school?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you actually do it joyfully?
Yeah.
You like it? Okay.
That's pretty good.
Very, very good. Hey, that's great. Amazing. And resourcefulness. I can see you've got all the Brahminical qualities and you've got all the Kshatriya qualities. Courage in battle. Are you taught to be courageous in battle? Are you taught not to fight?
Oh, yeah. if anybody hurts you or anything, just tell the teacher and sort it out.
Right, so you don't go out and prove how strong you are. Like that. Okay, interesting. Alright. Generosity, are you taught to be generous?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. You're going to a good school. Okay. So, but these are the qualities for Kshatriyas, anyway. So, these are general good qualities, but when push comes to shove, it's interesting to see how these qualities will be put to the test. Mm-hmm. You know, when you actually have to be generous, like if it's a matter of the next boy in the line has come late and he's really downhearted because he's not going to get any lunch. So you decide, I'll be really generous and I'll give him my lunch. You do anything like that?
No.
No. Okay. Just testing.
If somebody doesn't have the lunch, they have to actually get the actual food, like dinners, what the teacher school gives.
Okay.
So it's okay to, you can say if somebody's come late,
yeah,
and the dinner's all finished. You know, sometimes when everyone's eaten, sometimes nothing left now. So if you just imagine you've got your plate there and he came, would you say, here, there's nothing left, have mine. Would you do that?
Oh, no.
Okay. Just interesting to see.
Yeah, that's called generosity.
The qualities, yeah.
You know.
All right. So let's have a look then at the qualities of... actually, interesting, so far we looked at the Brahmins, and their qualities are qualities of the mode of goodness. Now these qualities of the Kshatriya are qualities of the mode of passion. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership. These are the symptoms of the mode of passion. Okay, now we come to the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. Now here we're coming to the Vaishyas. So, Bhaveshpur, would you like to read us about the qualities of the Kshatriya, the Vaishyas, for us, please.
Farming, cow protection and business are the natural work for the Vaishyas, and for the Sudras there are labour and service to others.
Okay. So the Vaishyas are in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and the Shudras are in the modes of ignorance. So these are how the material modes are working. So just to see that everything, all the qualities that people are possessing, are simply manifestations of these three modes of nature. Now, the Kshatriyas, as we discussed, particularly because we're looking at Bhagavad Gita, so Bhagavad Gita has a lot to do with Kshatriyas, because it's actually about a big battlefield. So here we can see, understand Arjuna's qualities: heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership. They're natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas. But Arjuna is declining to fight. He is not displaying that leadership. He's not displaying the heroism. He's not going to be a hero if he sits down at the battlefield and says, I'm not going to fight with anyone. They're meant for fighting. That's the natural duty. And similarly for Brahmins, their natural duty is to teach others and to perform sacrifices. Actually, particularly, what's the most important duty of the Brahmins?
Knowledge.
Yeah. But what do they actually have to do above all else?
Service.
Well, everyone has to serve, yeah. All that, just like your head is serving your body, because it's thinking its way through, presumably, before it tells your other parts what to do. Otherwise, the other parts just be doing all kinds of stuff. You know? So the head has to render service to the body, and the arms and the chest have to render service, and the belly has to render service. It has to digest all the food you put inside it. And your legs have to do service. It has to take the body here and there. So service is there for all the different parts of society. But the Brahmins have something most important to do.
Give knowledge.
They have to give knowledge, and they have to train others also to become Brahmins. They have to train others to be able to teach others. This is their role, most important thing. Just like it said that a king's most important function is he must have a son who can also carry on the succession of the line of kings. If he doesn't, then it all ends with him. And similarly with Brahmins, it's their duty not just to beget children who will become qualified Brahmins, but to train those children or to train others who they come across to get them to become Brahmins so they can also teach ongoing. That's the whole principle of disciplic succession in modern day society, just like you see people who are in business. You know, a lot of times people are in business and they want their sons to learn the business so they can carry on the family business, is it not? You have experience? So, but of course things don't always work out the way we expect them to work out. And in the whole system of disciplic succession, the whole principle of the spiritual master, his role is to take disciples who will also later become spiritual masters in their own right and teach others about the science of Krishna. So succession is a very important issue in the human society. And if you look at the ones who went down the coal mine, and hey, my dad was a coal miner and now I'm going to be a coal miner following in my dad's footsteps. Yeah. So the idea is that people tend to follow the family tradition, which is helpful. But, of course, nowadays that's become very, very difficult to do that, because we don't find any Brahmins, we don't find any kings, even real Vaishyas who actually are engaged seriously in agriculture and cow protection are very thin on the ground. And what to speak of Kshatriyas, who will be heroes and protect the members of society, very thin on the ground in actual fact. So, but this point is very nice that Arjuna is making. So, he's saying that the respectable superiors are always worshipable. In other words, if you have your superiors, you don't offer them even a verbal fight. This is the idea. This is etiquette. If your teachers give you some grief, the idea is you take it and say, okay, thank you very much. This is actually the etiquette. Not that you pull a knife out on them because they said something you didn't like, or they said something in a way that you didn't like. But this is how the culture is actually developed. But it's very important to understand that proper respect has to be given to respectable persons. And Arjun is displaying very nice qualities by showing that he doesn't want to chastise his superiors. It's not that someone, if they're an inferior, that they're not strong enough to be able to counterattack. It's just like, you see. Sorry, I'll just wait for you to settle and stop. Oh, okay. There's a seat there. Why don't you sit on the seat? Okay, so here's a point that even if the superiors attack, they shouldn't be counterattacked. Just like every young child knows, if my dad tells me off, I shouldn't turn around and give him a mouthful, right? So this is good behavior. So the principle is there in properly cultured society. And we see nice examples of Krishna, because Krishna, he also had children. And he had different degrees of submissive children. The most submissive was Prajumna, actually. His eldest child, the eldest son of Rukmini. And Prajumna was always incredibly submissive to his dad. Even if his dad told him to do something which was very painful or awkward to do, he would do it very joyfully, thinking, this is for Krishna. I'm so happy to do it for my father. And if there was something which was very pleasurable, which his father didn't want him to do, which Krishna didn't want him to do, he would very happily give it up. Say, okay, my father doesn't want me to do it. So this is a very submissive attitude. And the idea is that one has to learn something in spiritual life to make progress. One has to learn to be submissive. In fact, Krishna says there are two things that are essential in order to progress and learn the really important things in life. One thing is submissive inquiry, and the other is menial service. These things are absolutely essential if we want to learn how to make progress in spiritual life. And I'll give you a classic example. There's in Berry Place, not Berry Place, it's Soho Street now. The Soho Street Temple. There's one very nice, tall young man there who, when I go there, I see him with such a big smile on his face. Actually, he's an amazing character. I forget his name, but I just know him by his face because he's so blissful. And he's been there in this like submarine type place with little narrow corridors all over the place of Soho Street Temple. He's been there for years. And when I saw him last time in Soho Street, I asked him, how come you're still here so blissful? And what I see him doing is emptying the rubbish bins, and just taking care of things like that. So I asked him, what's your secret? How come you're always so blissful? And he said, actually, it's two words. Menial service. Actually, just menial service. And that makes him feel very blissful because he's not got to put on a profile. He's not got to be someone. He's just very happy to be engaged in menial devotional service, which is really a surprise. So menial service is one, and who knows the verse where Krishna is saying like this?
Tat vidhi pranipatina prasthina sevaya upadakshanta santi
te jnanam
na
upa jnaninas
upadista
Tadvadashana. Yes, yes. I think that's in chapter 3, isn't
it? Chapter 4.
Chapter 4, okay, transcendental knowledge. Where Krishna is explaining if you want this transcendental knowledge, then you have to do three things. One is you have to approach a spiritual master. Two, you have to inquire very submissively. And three, you have to render menial service to him. This is actually how you get transcendental knowledge. Because when we behave like this towards a spiritual master, then they're very pleased to give us transcendental knowledge. This is the simple formula that Krishna recommends in Bhagavad Gita. So, actually this principle of being submissive to the superiors is very important in spiritual life. And it's very important even in material life. Because if you want to do well at your school or college or university or even in your workplace, if you do what the boss tells you to do, you get on okay. Yeah, is it not? And if when the boss tells you to do something, you argue with him, oh, here is a useless employee again. And before long, you might find yourself out on the street. Or if you're at school and you're just always arguing with your teacher, then you might find yourself in detention or whatever it may be, or writing out some lines, I must listen and do what my teacher says 200 times or something like that.
Or look for a new school.
Hmm?
Or look for a new school.
Or look for a new school, yeah. Give your dad a headache. So the idea is that submissive inquiry and menial service is always there. And in fact, in the Vedic culture, the teacher is considered worshipful, actually. He's called, what is the name for a teacher in Vedic culture?
Guru.
Guru, yeah. He's Guru. And the Guru is meant to be given all respect. So there are different levels of Guru. There's one who knows the spiritual science of the self. He's the best of all of the gurus. But there are different things. Like, for example, if you want to grow up to be a great bowman and you want to be able to shoot arrows and wipe out your enemies, then you have to approach someone who can teach you how to do that. Yeah? They're your teacher. Now, Arjun and the Pandavas and also the Kauravas, they all have the same teacher whose name was... Drona, yes. He's Drona. Drona, he was also Acharya. An Acharya is someone who teaches by his own example. So here he was actually fighting on the battlefield. You know, he's setting the example. This is how you do it. He wasn't afraid to pick up a bow and arrow. He wasn't just saying, you sit behind a button and a desk and you press a few buttons and let them all get blown to smithereens. No. He was actually a teacher by example. He actually practically taught the Pandavas and the Kauravas how to fight. He knew all the fighting arts. He knew not just from the basic things of like fighting with a club and fighting with a bow and arrow, fighting with a sword or a lance, but he taught them how to use all sorts of really dramatic weapons like brahmastras, you know, ones that were powerful enough to blow up a planet. And he would also teach them how to set up your army according to a particular military formation on the battlefield that, you know, they're going to get you. And if the other party puts their army in a formation like this, then you counterattack with a formation like that of your men. So in that way, you have the upper hand. Because if you're going to fight, the idea is you fight to win. Yeah? You don't take a dive, as they say. You actually have to fight to win. And the Kshatriya's duty is to fight according to the proper rules of conduct, but in such a way so that you win. Yeah. You're fighting in such a way, so not like you're fighting at school. Sometimes you may get into fights with your friends at school, and I'm not advocating that. But when a Kshatriya fights, he fights to the death. So either you're going to be killed or I'm going to be killed. But when we start fighting, one of us is going to be killed. This is Kshatriya code. Yeah. Not, you know, serious stuff. Mm. So that sort of fighting, they have to be trained to have that mentality, to have that. But that fighting, that heroism, that leadership, resourcefulness, courage in battle, is something that is a natural quality of the Kshatriyas. And when the children would go to the school, when they go to the Gurukul, those children who developed those natural qualities, they would be educated according to their varna, according to their social position. The children who displayed the qualities of Kshatriyas, they would get trained up as Kshatriyas. The children who developed the qualities of Brahmanas would be trained up as Brahmanas. And the children who developed the qualities of Vaishyas, they will be trained up as Vaishyas. But the Shudras, there was no need to train them because their job was really learning. But nowadays we live in a society where everybody is trained to be a Shudra. No one is trained to be a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or occasionally a Vaishya, but hardly any, or a Brahmin. But actually everyone is trained to be a Shudra. So this is what we're living with in the current day situation, that actually everything is very much topsy-turvy. But if the children are selected according to their qualities and trained in that proper varna of life, then they can develop and they can excel. It's very important to do that. And of course, if you happen to be born in a family of brahmanas, it's very easy to get trained up to be a brahmana because your parents will teach you naturally those qualities. If you're born like Arjuna was in a family of Kshatriyas, it's very natural that you're going to get trained up to be like that. So, but it's not that just because you're born in that family, you're going to be a first class qualified person. If just like if you say, well, my dad is Muhammad Ali, then naturally, so I'm the king now and I can outbox everyone. Still, you have to be trained. Still, you have to become qualified. Or if your dad happens to be a doctor, does that mean you can go and do the surgery on someone and cut him open or amputate a limb or do some brain surgery on him? Much as you may like to. Anyway, the principle is that one has to get trained up and develop the qualification. And this is the business. So, for example, the Brahmins, as Krishna is going to refer to later, there are Brahmins and there are Brahma Bandhus, those who are friends of Brahmins or in the family of Brahmins. But that doesn't make them a Brahmin. Just because you happen to know a Brahmin doesn't make you a Brahmin. Or just because you happen to be the son of a Brahmin doesn't make you a Brahmin. But if you go on to become qualified, just like we have Pundarik and Hare Krishnadas living in Nottingham, they're both very good GPs. And they have three sons and one daughter-in-law. But they all, they all have to become qualified and they have to work at it for years and years and years to become qualified in medical science. So some serious training is there. And these Kshatriyas were seriously trained. And then they know automatically what their duty is. For example, if you're a doctor and someone comes to you clutching, pain, they can immediately ask you the questions and do the analysis. They understand what to do and they get on with it and do it. So similarly, Arjuna, he has been trained to be a noble warrior, Kshatriya. That's his training. That's his heritage, not just from his family background. It's his training to be a Kshatriya. So Krishna is encouraging him to fight because that's his duty in life. To execute, because the person who knows the higher values of life automatically acts according to a sense of duty. This is very important. And Arjuna is being encouraged by Krishna right the way through Bhagavad Gita that you have to act as a sense of with a sense of duty. This is not something that is very encouraged in modern day civilization, actually. It's your duty to honor your parents, it's your duty to Actually, people don't know even the basic duties, what to speak of the spiritual duties. So what is the duty of the human being? We've talked about different types of human beings, but what's the duty of the human being generally?
To respect others.
Sorry?
To respect others. To respect others.
That's certainly a duty. That's one of the duties of human beings, yes. What else is there duties of the human beings?
Aim to attain pure devotional love for Krishna.
Yes, this is the topmost duty of the human being. But this is not being taught in any of the schools or colleges, even if you go to a Catholic school. the topmost duty is to know Krishna, to know God and love God. It's declared even in the Bible, and you can quote this to your teachers, that the first commandment is, do you know what the first commandment is? Okay, well you should ask your teacher and you can quote this to him. That in the Bible it says that the first commandment is to love thy God with thy whole heart and thy whole mind and thy whole soul. That's the first commandment in the Bible. That is the real basic duty of the human being. There you go. It's not a new thing. It's a timeless thing. Krishna is speaking this 5,000 years ago, and he's told Arjuna that it wasn't just 5,000 years ago that I spoke this. I'm speaking it again to you now, but I previously spoke it 120 million years ago to Vibhishan. And he instructed it to Ikshaku, who instructed it to Manu, and all the saintly kings understood it in that way. So there's a tradition. There's a very noble tradition of saintly kings going back millions and millions of years. And now Arjuna is saying, wait a minute, I don't want to fight. And Krishna's saying, wait a minute, yeah, this is not right. This is not right. You come from a noble family. This is, just give up this weakness, Arjuna, and get on with it. So there are many arguments going to be brought up by Arjuna in this regard. And particularly this point is being stressed by Arjuna in this point, that you shouldn't attack your superiors, even if they attack you or chastise you. Arjuna is making the point that I shouldn't counter-attack them. This is proper behavior. And it's also very important behavior in spiritual life. And when we take a spiritual master, it's essential behavior. Because why is it essential behavior? It's because it's the duty of the spiritual master or the teacher to chastise his disciple or student. Because if you don't chastise them, then they don't learn, actually. So Krishna, Arjuna is a first-class person, but Krishna starts off by chastising him. As soon as Arjuna agrees, in fact requests and begs Krishna that please resolve my dilemma, you become my spiritual master. What does the first thing Krishna do is he chastises him. He says, Arjuna, you're talking like a fool. No mincing of words. You know. Why are you speaking like a fool? Yeah. One may think that I'm just being attacked, that my spiritual master is giving me a hard time, he's calling me a fool. But actually it's the duty of the spiritual master to chastise the disciple to correct him. It's the duty of the father to chastise the son so that he doesn't carry on with the nonsense ways but actually develops better habits. This is the duty. And it's the duty of the teacher to chastise and correct the students so they actually learn how to do things the right way. Because inevitably, why do we go to school? We go to school because we only know how to do things the wrong way. And the whole principle of going to school is to learn how to do things the right way. Similarly, in spiritual life, if I think I know what is the right way already, and trust me, you may have heard this before, if you've ever tried to talk to people and tell them about Krishna, they say, yes, yes, we know these things. You come across that ever? Yeah. So, actually, The point is that someone who's actually serious, they take a spiritual master, which means I'm willing to be corrected. That's the first thing. I have to be willing to be submissive, render menial service, and make submissive inquiry. And it means when I'm chastised, this is actually considered something very, very helpful in spiritual life. It's considered mercy, real mercy of the spiritual master, if he chastises you, if he glorifies you. This actually isn't real mercy. But if he chastises you, then this is good, because that chastisement is meant for your correction. That's the point. And Krishna sets off right from the very beginning. This is the proper behavior. Not to glorify the disciple, but to chastise him so he actually improves. This is a very significant point. Otherwise, how will you make progress? If I already know everything, okay, then you don't need a spiritual master. What's the use? If I'm just going to tell you what a wonderful person you are, how are you ever going to improve? And if I only speak about your good qualities, what will you ever learn? So therefore, some chastisement is required. So Arjun is displaying this point, that when you're given some chastisement, you don't say, how dare you, I'm such a great person. You say, no, you take it. You don't offer even a verbal fight to superiors. Rather, you offer them respect and learn. And this is actually the process of how we make progress in spiritual life. So some very important points in this verse of purport. Anybody got any questions or comments? What do you do, Prabhu, if your teacher tells you off? Do you sulk? Do you have a go at your teacher? What do you do?
If she tells me off, I try to, next time I try to get it right, but I listen if she tells me to go, but don't go aggressively, but feel sorry and so because you've done it wrong.
Okay. So you take it as a blessing from your teacher that they're actually trying to teach you how to do it right.
Yeah.
Good. This is a nice attitude. You're a good boy. But still you have to be told off sometimes. Okay, good. Any other comments or questions? Challenges? Kieran Prabhu, I can see you're itching to ask something. Say something.
Maybe next week.
Next week. Ashok,
please. Well, I was going to ask, you know, like, nowadays, you know, teachers, they teach you all kinds of weird stuff, you know, like,
yeah.
The other day at university, one of my teachers was trying to prove that, you know, this theory of Darwin, you know, is it Cape Town theory?
That's one of the things. One of the
corollaries. Trying to prove that it's right, you know. I mean, do we talk back to these kind of teachers? You know, do we try to say that no, you're wrong? I mean, we can't just accept it, can we? Because it's coming from a teacher, but it's
okay. Now, here comes a very interesting point. There may be some debate, and there may be some discussion, and especially when you know that you're on the lines of Shastra and that this person is not on the lines of Shastra, then you have a right to put forward the point of view of Shastra, because this is the ultimate authoritative view. And if someone is going against the Shastra, then they're actually misleading people. So, but obviously you have to do it in a gentlemanly way. And actually, in the universities, they often encourage some debate. So it happens that there may be some questions which may not be overly liked by the teacher. But still, if these questions actually throw more light on the subject, then that's for the benefit of all the students. So I was watching this very interesting DVD the other day called Intelligent Design, just on this point. Very interesting DVD. And it's describing how this group of scientists, they got together and they all had some serious questions about Darwin's theory of evolution. And they got together and they actually, some of them had done years and years and years of research. And for example, Darwin's initial hypothesis that he was putting forward was based on the idea that you've got a simple cell which is got a nucleus, and it's basically a blob of protoplasm, and that it can somehow or other expand and develop and somehow learn to mutate in different ways. And they were expressing that Darwin's theory worked very well up to a point, but then it started raising a lot more questions, because since Darwin, so much research has been done on that simple cell to analyze and even be able to take pictures of what's going on in that simple cell, quote unquote, simple cell. And when you actually start breaking down that simple cell into its thousands and millions of component parts, with actual machinery running and constructing and making those component parts of that one cell, and actually looking to see how within that one cell you've got hundreds of machines making different parts of that cell, and you've got hundreds of other machines making those machines and maintaining those machines, and you've got hundreds of other machines making and maintaining those machines, and this is all going on within one simple cell. And they took the example of one particular type of cell, and you've got a design, you've got an outer crust, and you've got a tail fin which is spinning, and you've got like a whole motorized design, and it's obvious that the design is like an outboard motor on a boat. And you start to look at this whole thing and you see, wait a minute, this couldn't have evolved, because evolved means selecting some things which are useful and unselecting things which are no longer useful. That's Darwin's theory. But here we see actual elements creating things which don't previously exist. And somehow or other, it becomes clearly obvious that there's actually some intelligence behind it to make such a design. After all, you make an outboard motor, you've got to be a pretty smart guy to make an outboard motor. And here you find within a simple cell, you've got hundreds of thousands of these things, just within one simple cell. And all machinery creating all sorts of machines to create all sorts of other machines. I mean, we know that, you know, they have all these movies about the day of the machines, when the machines take over, yes? These things are out there in the popular domain. All these wonderful science fiction and horror movies that the machines are taking over. But here we see, even within a simple cell, the machines are doing it, but all according to a perfect structure and design. And the whole point of machines making machines is, the question is, well, the machines have to be intelligent enough to make the other machines and to maintain the other machines. So therefore the question comes, intelligent design. Then the question has to come, well, whose intelligence? If there's actually, and that completely wipes out Darwin's theory. As Darwin himself admitted, that if it ever became known, in his writing, in Darwin's own writings, he wrote, if it ever became known that there were something like, I'm paraphrasing, so, but you can, you know, I'll find out the exact quote for you one time. If it ever became known about a more complex structure of things that actually required far more than simple selection or deselection, then my whole theory would be finished. And now, by the analysis of the simple cells, which the scientists themselves have actually done, they have proved that Darwin's theory is completely finished. So those who are actually really in the know about the structure and the Darwin's basic point, which was the origin of the species, which he guessed at and made wild guesses about the origin of where the species came from, but didn't offer any real evidence about the basic point, is where did these species originate from? Where did the matter originate from? He never actually answered those questions. He answered lots of other questions around it, but he never actually got to the point of what's the origin of it. So when you actually start looking at this very carefully, and I'll lend you the DVD if you want, you can have a look, and then you can have a real argument with your teacher, and that will give you some serious ammunition. Then you can start to see that where has the intelligence come from? That intelligence is always exhibited by a person. Even to make an intelligent machine requires an intelligent person to design it. The intelligent machine doesn't happen by chance. There has to be someone more intelligent to design it. So these are important principles. And this actually is the basis on which Prabhupada, who was a student of economics and also of pharmaceutical studies, how he was defeating all the world's philosophers simply because of these basic, simple, straightforward, common sense, shastric arguments, which enabled him to defeat all the world's philosophers and expose the weaknesses of their arguments. So it's good we learn to see how Prabhupada was such an expert. Actually, Prabhupada was also like a fighter, because you see that Prabhupada's expertise in arguing is so good. The example is just like of one of these Japanese martial arts people. Mm-hmm. They know exactly where to chop and how to chop and what pressure point to use. And then the opponent is defeated. So Prabhupada, his arguments are like, you know, serious martial arts, karate chops, and all these great edifice of so-called wonderful solutions to all the problems of life.
It's interesting that, because Stephen Hawking also has come up with a sort of a theory about the origins of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
They come out of bubbles.
Where did the bubbles come from? Immediately. Yeah, exactly. It comes from a person.
Yeah.
We can understand that because it's there in the Shastra way before Dawkins or whatever.
Maybe they're just reading the Shastras and bringing this mixing around ideas.
Yeah.
I made this.
Yeah.
So
everything's got someone's name on it.
Yeah.
You know, your watch has got someone's name on it. Your car has got someone's name on it. BMW, Ford, or whatever it may be. You know, sorry if you've only got a Ford. Anyway, but the fact is that everything, all the creations have got someone's name on it. You look at your sweater, Marks and Spencer's, or whatever it is, or Primark, or whatever it may be. It's got someone's name on it. The whole creation has got someone's name on it, but you have to learn where to look for the signature. And then you see, oh, that's a Krishna. That's got Krishna's signature on it. Yeah. And similarly, these arguments, even the arguments the atheists get, where are they getting their intelligence from? They're getting it from Krishna. Krishna's giving them the intelligence to forget about him. But he's also giving the devotees the intelligence to remember him and understand him. So it's actually all coming from Krishna. Even the atheists are coming. We want to forget Krishna. We've got this whole material universe where we can play it that God doesn't exist, that God's just, everything's just a creation of chance. Some cosmic slime just happened. Yeah. If that's what we want to believe, Krishna gives us the intelligence so we can believe that. But our job is also to learn these very simple principles and straightforward principles, but to learn them very nicely, so that these rascals can be defeated. And to that end, Prabhupada set up the Bhaktivedanta Institute of very, very advanced, elevated scientists to take head-on the whole so-called scientific community. And that's still going on. And therefore you get books like Forbidden Archaeology and The Hidden History of the Human Race like that. to expose all the weaknesses and their cheating programs. Okay, good question. Any other comments or questions? Oh gosh, it's 9:30. <Let's get something. laughs> I'm going to get shot. Okay. All right. Okay, but let's leave it for there and see how we do next week in text 5. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Bhuta Vaishnava, Bhakti Vedanta Swami Chanam. Namaste, Prabhupada ki jai. Namaste, Prabhupada ki jai. Namaste, Prabhupada ki jai.